This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Do you find yourself easily distracted, unable to focus on the things you need to focus on? Well, you're not alone. It's become fairly common to observe that we're being bombarded by ideas and images, messages, and all manners of distraction today. So how do we maintain attention, focus, on the things we need to be focused on? Daniel Goleman may be best known for his writings on emotional intelligence, challenging the idea that IQ is the sole measure of one's abilities. He runs the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, and has a new book called Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. It uses new brain science to reveal ways people can use focus to be successful. We'd like you to join our conversation. Do you have trouble focusing? How do you deal with the distractions of everyday life? Call us at 860-275-7266. Again, our phone number is 860-275-7266. You can email us wherewelive@wnpr.org. You can tweet us at wherewelive or find us online on our new website. It's wnpr.org. Daniel Goleman's new book, again, Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. He joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts. Daniel, welcome to our show. Thanks so much for being here.
John, good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, I have to start with an admission. I was preparing for our interview this weekend, and I was reading your book. And here's what else I had going on while I was reading your book. I had emails and tweets coming in on my iPhone. I had the Army-Navy football game on my iPad in the background. I was watching the snow fall out in my yard. I had a fire going. My cat was all up in my face. My wife was baking cookies. They smelled very, very good. And at one point, you actually posed a question early in your book that lists back 3 points that you'd made earlier in the chapter to see if the reader was actually paying attention, and I failed miserably. So I like that you did that. What does this say about me that I couldn't, you know, do all these things at once?
You're perfectly normal is what it says. We're all facing the same onslaught. I think that one of the reasons I wrote the book, actually, is that attention is a mental faculty that we haven't really noticed. It's the act of noticing itself. And it's under siege today. It's not just the cat. It's not just the wife. It's not just the Army, Navy. It's not just the TV. It's particularly the digital distractions. I think that has upped the ante in a rather insidious way. They slide into our lives, and we get distracted on the spot. We don't notice it. But I think what it's done is shrunk the time we have where we control our attention. We put it where we want it to be. We get that thing done we have to do. Or we just be with the person that we love who's right in front of us. You know, you go to a restaurant now and romantic candles and so on. You see a couple out to dinner and they're both looking at their phones, not into each other's eyes. And I think we need to take back control of our own attention.
You know, I'm fascinated by this subject, and I've done interviews about digital distraction over the course of the last few years, and it does seem to be some sort of epidemic. And one thing that I guess I'd like to hear from you is whether or not you feel as though, as a species, we're somehow changing our wiring, we're changing our brains, or whether or not this is just a short-term thing that we have to work through, having all of these distractions coming in. I'm fascinated by the idea that we may indeed be changing the way humans are going to actually work and live in the world by having all these digital distractions going at the same time.
Well, I think that there is a change. It's not a brain change. The brain changes take evolutionary pressures that don't exist anymore. It is a cultural change. The norms are shifting, and they're shifting in a way that is not good for our ability to get things done or to excel. You know, the more you can concentrate on something, the better you can do it, the better you can marshal whatever skills or talents you have. That's shrinking. Actually, I think that we need to get more intentional, particularly for kids. Kids are growing up in an environment unlike the reality we faced, we adults when we were kids. I was at a school the other day, and the teacher said, you know, we had kids texting each other in class so much that we just banned phones from the school, and now they're paying attention again. I was in a second grade classroom in Spanish Harlem, a very poverty-stricken area. Kids live in a housing project, tumultuous, chaotic, traumatic lives. The kids were very calm, very focused. Why? They're teaching these kids how to pay attention. They're actually strengthening the muscle of attention through a simple exercise every day. And I think, gee, every kid should have this now.
Well, tell us more about that simple exercise. There's so much that I want to talk to you about, but let's start with the youngest people, the people who are growing up in this world in which there's this neural buzz you talk about. They constantly have these distractions, and it's been with them throughout their lives. What are the things that we can do to teach them to pay more attention?
Well, the capacity that we want to strengthen in the mind is called cognitive control. Cognitive control is the ability to stay with one point of focus and to ignore that distraction, to do your homework before you do the video game, to finish the book you're reading rather than texting your friend. It sounds like a simple choice, but actually if we let it slide, then you have a mind that is totally distracted. So in this second grade classroom, seven-year-olds, every day they have a session called Breathing Buddies. They get their favorite stuffed animal, little animal, find a place to lie down on the floor, put it on their tummy, and they watch it go up when they breathe in and down when they breathe out. 1, 2, 3 on the in-breath, 1, 2, 3 on the out-breath. When their mind wanders, they bring it back. Every time you're focusing on something, your mind wanders off, you notice it wandered, and you bring it back. You're actually strengthening the connectivity for the circuitry for paying attention. And this is circuitry that grows from birth on. And kids need help because there are periods in childhood, particularly in the younger years and then again in adolescence, when the circuits for, hey, I want to do that right now, for impulse, are much hotter, much stronger than the circuits for inhibition that say, no, the consequences aren't great if I do that now. I want to stick with this. Those get in balance over the course of adulthood. But in childhood, kids need help with the growth of those circuits. In fact, the teacher said to me, you know, the kids that are doing this seem to be advanced about 2 years, and their ability not just to concentrate, this is interesting, but also to manage disruptive emotions. The brain uses the same circuitry for both things. And there was a study done in New Zealand about cognitive control that showed a child's ability to do this between the ages of 4 and 8 predict their financial success and health in their 30s better than their IQ, better than the wealth of the family they grew up in. It's rather astonishing.
That sort of early training, though, doesn't sound that much different than practicing yoga or meditation, things that I know more schools are paying more attention to.
Well, I would say that anytime you have an exercise like yoga or meditation where you focus on one thing, you notice your mind wandering, and you bring it back. It could be your piano lessons. It could be training, you know, for a sport. You need concentration in those too. Anytime you do that consistently, you're strengthening that circuitry. And I would say the classical meditation methods have all been, at base, a concentration exercise. And if you strip away the belief system, you're left with the same thing I've just been describing.
We're talking with Daniel Goleman. He's, of course, the best-selling author of Emotional Intelligence. His new book, though, is called Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence, an important topic in our easily distracted world. You can call us at 860-275-7266. We'd love to hear from you. If you have trouble focusing, do you notice your kids have trouble focusing on the task at hand? What tools do you use to pay better attention? 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive@wnpr.org. You can tweet us at wherewelive. You can also go to our website, wnpr.org. When I think about the different types of focus one might have, I put them into two different categories. I know that you have three categories, Daniel. I think of the two being the task at hand, the thing that I need to do now, and then the other being the big picture, the idea that we should be able to shift focus from the things that we need to do right now to and back and forth from the things that are going to be a longer term problem for us to solve. It's sort of that idea of seeing the forest for the trees. Maybe you can explain if these are the correct definitions of two types of focus or if there's more than that.
Well, I actually talk about three that I think everybody needs. One is being able to focus inside, to manage your own attention, manage your inner world, your focus on that thing and not let your emotions disrupt you. Maybe you deal with them later. That's one, emotional self-management, emotional self-awareness. The second, which you haven't mentioned, is focusing on the other person, the person in front of you, empathy, tuning in, being present. I mean, the holidays are coming up. And we're going to have family gatherings and our parties. And, you know, we should enjoy each other, not just be distracted when we're with people by our digital devices. I just got an email from a friend who said, you know, this holiday, I'm going to be sure that we don't let those digital distractions intrude on our family time. The third is that other awareness. It's zooming out. It's a wide aperture, big lens, looking at the world around us, what's impinging on our ability to function the way we want, you know, whether it's our family dynamics, our organizational dynamics, what's going on in our school, or the world at large, the economic forces. It's an outer focus, which I think is absolutely crucial, particularly for leaders, particularly for people who head an organization who have to come up with strategy. So I talk about those three kinds and levels of focus.
But why I think that those three kinds are so interesting, and again, not to make this all about me, but as I consider my own inability to focus at times, I am thinking in terms of the task at hand and the big picture, and they both seem to be task-oriented, not about me or the other or a group of others, but they tend to, in my mind at least, be focused on things I have to do now or things I have to do later. When you talk about inner, other, and outer focus, that is putting focus in a slightly different place, isn't it?
Well, it does, and there's another aspect of this that you remind me of, and you know, life is not all about getting things done. Life is also about enjoying yourself. Life is about creativity, imagination, and those take a slightly different kind of self-management of attention. When you're trying to get something done, you have to concentrate. You want to use your skills at your best. You got to focus. And that's intentional. But, you know, if you want to just enjoy yourself, you want to open up your awareness, not worry about getting things done. Just be in the moment. Be present. That's a different kind of attention. And there's a third kind, which is being creative. If you want to have a creative insight, you know, at first you throw yourself into the problem, you try to solve it, try to gather information. That's intentional. If you don't get the answer, let it go. A lot of creative insights, it turns out, come up when people are just walking their dog or, you know, getting on a bus or showering. And that's because your mind is open to the largest range of free association. So every kind of attention has its place. Every kind has its purpose. And what I've tried to do in the book Focus is help us understand which kind of attention works for what, so we have a better range of choice in our own lives.
And you also tell the stories of very powerful CEOs taking vacations and figuring out the next thing that they need to learn about their lives just because they're able to tune out for a second and not necessarily focus in the way they have on the thing that is exactly at hand. I want to get to a few phone calls here at 860-275-7266 before our break. Valerie is calling from Groton. Valerie, go ahead. You're on with Daniel Goleman. Hi, Valerie. Are you there? Well, let's put Valerie on hold here and see if we can recapture her line. This idea of taking a vacation to step away from things, Daniel, I think is so important for so many people just to, in my mind again, I think of rewiring the brain, but you're talking about people's ability to focus actually comes from stepping away from the things that are on the day-to-day grind.
Well, that's particularly important when, you know, concentration wears out. It's a mental muscle. And like any muscle, you can overuse it. We need to take breaks. And those breaks can be, you know, that 10 minutes a day and when you just go for a walk. Or it can also be a vacation. You mentioned that CEO. It was a guy who was working at Oracle as a vice president. Went to Hawaii, was swimming with dolphins and just enjoying himself. And he got the idea that this new thing called cloud computing was going to be really important. And the more he started to think about it, the more he realized that what he was going to do was quit his job and start his own company, which he did. And now it's one of the world's largest cloud computing companies.
Let's go again to Valerie in Groton. I think we've established her line. Hello, Valerie. You're on the air. Where is Valerie? Let's try this one more time. Valerie? Valerie seems to be some sort of a robot voice that we will deal with in a moment. Valerie, hopefully we'll get to your phone call in a moment. Why don't we take our break, and we'll get some more of your phone calls in at 860-275-7266. We're talking with Daniel Goleman. He's the author of Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. We want to hear from you if you have tricks and tips to try to focus better with this easily distracted life. You can call us, 860-275-7266. You can also tweet us at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Our guest today is Daniel Goleman. He's the best-selling author of Emotional Intelligence, but he has a new book called Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. There's a lot of new brain science about attention and why that's so very important in our modern world. If you want to join us, you can email us where we live at WNPR.org. You can tweet us at Where We Live. We're working on a phone system that's giving us some problems again today, so hopefully we'll be able to get to some of your phone calls in just a moment. I want to talk about a few different types of attention that you write about, Daniel Goleman, that are really important, and they have to deal with different parts of the brain. This idea of bottom-up versus top-down thinking. Can you explain what you're talking about?
Sure. The top-down thinking is from the parts of the brain just behind the forehead, prefrontal area, which is the brain's executive center. This is where we plan, where we decide, where we think about the future, where we decide what to do, and, for example, what kind of attention to deploy. The bottom-up part of the brain is from the lower circuitry. It's more primitive. It's more ancient in evolution. It's automatic. It's out of awareness for the most part. It's what fills in the blanks. For example, when we speak a sentence, we don't have to stop to think of the grammatical rules we're going to follow or the syntax. The bottom-up brain does it for us. And the bottom-up brain also is where we store our habits, things, routines we do without having to think about it, so that we can use that narrow range of attention that is voluntary to do what we want, to pay attention to where we need it to be. Our distractions actually come from a strip of brain circuitry that has a strong bottom-up connectivity. When we're focusing on one thing, our mind is going to wander. It wanders about 50% of the time on average. And that's a bottom-up phenomena. Before we realize what's going on, our mind has drifted off somewhere and we drift right along with it. And this is the muscle that you strengthen when you notice your mind wanders and you bring it back. Of course, I don't know if you saw that interesting article in the Times magazine about attention deficit disorder.
Yes.
And the overdiagnosis. It struck me that what seems to be going on is that the normal developmental course of childhood has become pathologized for many kids. I mean, there is a small group that do have the problem, but what was being pointed out was that more kids are being given the diagnosis than really should have it and sadly are being medicated. It occurs to me that we could be teaching kids how to amp up this muscle, how to flex it, rather than medicating them.
And it's something that I think for many of our listeners, and we're going to get to some emails in just a moment and tweets that people are sending us, where we live at WNPR.org or tweeting us at where we live. People are concerned about this because they do, Daniel Goleman, see this this pathology of attention deficit disorder, this idea that kids are essentially kids, but yet so many of them are being treated in this way. When it becomes an adult issue, when the hyperactivity comes out and it's just the ADD, what happens? Are people able to be successful diagnosed with ADD on a regular basis?
Yeah, this is the encouraging thing. Many people who would qualify for that diagnosis in adulthood have learned to manage their attention well, to work around whatever problem they do have. But also, it turns out, as a group, they're far more creative. They're more likely to be successful entrepreneurs. Branson, the guy who founded Virgin Records, Virgin Airlines, and so on, is a guy who has always had problems during the school years of his life. But once he got into the business world, all of a sudden he was this visionary. And it's because the ability to be with a wandering mind and to harvest it for innovative ideas turns out to play very well if you are an entrepreneur and you know what to do with those ideas.
But, of course, not all of us are blessed with his ability to deal with all these multiple inputs, to have the wandering mind but yet be able to get things done. Help us figure out, Daniel Goleman, for the rest of us, the ones who have not yet figured out how to have multiple things happening at once and focus attention on the things that need to happen at the times that they need to happen. How do we harness this in our own minds?
Well, for some people, it is a problem that is handled well, or best handled, I should say, with medications that help you focus and also with coaching that helps you find practical methods like writing down reminders or going through a particular set of protocol of what you need to do today or need to do now. There are a lot of methods that coaches for adults with ADD use with people that help them get through the day and focus and so on. But I also think we're overlooking something which is, when you think about it, is rather self-evident, which is, you know, attention is a mental muscle. Why don't we help people strengthen it? I think that the fact that ADD has been colonized by pharmaceutical companies that are making lots of money getting people to take medication has meant we also ignore the natural talent that the mind has for paying attention and for how to cultivate that and how to strengthen it and what we could do for in kids from early childhood on. One of the sad things is that, you know, there's a developmental lag. Boys lag behind girls in the development of this muscle. And I think that during that lag, disproportionately boys are diagnosed with ADD. And this may be one reason. They're just being boys, but through the lens of ADD, it looks like a problem that needs medication. I'm saying, why don't we teach these kids how to concentrate? Actually, there are studies going on at several major universities now where they're looking for non-pharmaceutical ways to help kids get through that.
You're listening to Daniel Goleman. He's the author of Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hopefully get to some more of your phone calls. If you've called into our program so far, we're resetting our phone system because we'd love to hear your voice. A lot of people wanted to join this conversation. Francesca tweets at us, "I find quiet moments away from what I have to do helpful. Taking a walk or stepping outside are enough to reset. Sometimes, if you have troubles focusing, you can give us some of your questions. If you have some thoughts about how to better focus, you can email wherewelive@wnpr.org or tweet us at wherewelive. We'll be back. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Dan Estey, Commissioner of the State DEEP, that's the Department of Environmental and Energy, has a plan for energy security that includes a huge investment in natural gas. But what about the effects of natural gas extraction methods like fracking and the uncertainty of future low prices? What about the need for renewable sources of energy? You can join me in conversation with Dan Estey in a program that was taped in front of a live audience at the Mark Twain House in Hartford. It was sponsored by the World Affairs Council of Connecticut. I hope you can join us here on Where We Live. Today in the program, we're talking with Daniel Goleman. He is the author of Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. He joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts today. We, unfortunately, for a call-in show, have a program where our phones have broken. And Daniel Goleman, sometimes things work well, and sometimes they don't work terribly well. But we'll muster through. We'll take some of your tweets and hopefully get to some of those phone calls in just a moment. If you want to email us, wherewelive@wnpr.org, or you can tweet us at wherewelive. Daniel, could you explain what the flow state is?
Yeah, the flow state is the mental state that we get in when we're absolutely at our best, when whatever it is we do, we outdo our personal best. It was discovered by researchers at the University of Chicago who asked a wide variety of people, tell us about a time you outdid yourself, absolutely best performance. And they asked a range of people, ballerinas, basketball players, neurosurgeons. Didn't matter who they asked. They got the same inner experiential state. It was one where, first of all, people's concentration is 110%. You're totally absorbed in what you're doing. You're not going to be distracted by anything. It's super concentration. Your skill set is challenged at the top. No matter what domain of expertise it is, you have to call on the best abilities that you have. And it's a state where people feel really good. It's enjoyable. I think a lot of the things we do in life by choice are things that get us in a kind of a microflow. But the key to flow is concentration.
The key is concentration. Is that coming from primarily this bottom-up mind or this top-down mind that we've just discussed? Because I can see where an athlete acting without even thinking and doing the thing that he or she has done so many times over and again and has practiced so much is acting in some ways instinctually, but it's not as simple as that.
Well, it's not either or. The top-down mind and the bottom-up mind are always working together in concert. So what you're doing is top-down, focusing, bringing your mind back, keeping your attention right on that one thing. Meanwhile, your bottom-up mind is running all the automatic routines that you've practiced over the years that make you so good. And if you're a brain surgeon, it's one kind of thing. If you're a basketball player, it's quite another. But you need both at the same time.
Let's go to Derek in Windsor and hope that this phone works. Derek, hi. You're on Where We Live.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better now that you're on the radio. Go ahead, Derek. What's on your mind?
I think your phone needs to concentrate, but my question is to the guests there. I know a lot of people that if they're doing a project, they're not able to focus, to concentrate, but then they have to take a smoke, whatever they smoke. Some is cigarettes, some is marijuana, some people take a drink. I would like to know what's going on in the brain, why, you know, suddenly they take a smoke or a drink, they are able to, you know, concentrate more than before.
Well, it depends on the kind of distraction, I think. And I'm making a big guess here. I don't know your friends. I don't know the situation. But I'll tell you this. The most powerful kind of distractor is emotionally upsetting things. That often, you know, problems in relationships, you know, why didn't she answer my email? Was it that thing I said to her? Whatever it is that we can worry about, that we tend to loop and ruminate about over and over. Those kinds of worries are powerful distractors. So if your friends are feeling better after they do something that basically inhibits that part of the mind, I think it's a letting go of the, and here I'm making a big guess, but it might be that they're able finally to let go of that thing that was keeping their mind from focusing on that thing they've got to get done. Now they can do it.
Something that a lot of people turn to, Daniel, is coffee, to caffeine, because they want to be more alert and awake. That's something that if you do it the wrong way, it can actually take away from your attention.
Well, if you overdose, I think you'll be too jittery. You activate that nervous, anxious part of the brain. But if you can fine-tune and titrate just the right amount of caffeine, it does amp up the systems for being alert. So I think it's an aid that's understandable.
It seems as though our phones are working again, so feel free to call us at 860-275-7266 to talk with Daniel Goleman, the author of Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. Sarah's in Farmington. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi, John. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having me on. I have two things I wanted to say. One, what has to do with Richard Branson and the fact that there are a lot of people who struggle through school but then are very successful once they get out. And I think one of the reasons is because once they get out, they're doing something they want to do, especially entrepreneurs. They go out and they can throw themselves into it and be incredibly focused, even though they struggled through school because they were being forced to do certain things. And I think that with my kids especially, they do much better when it's something that they really want to do. They can really do a great job and stay focused. And then if it's something that they have absolutely no interest in, it's near impossible. The other comment I wanted to make is about yoga. Yoga breathing, I have terrible ADD. And when I go into yoga and sit for an hour and practice yoga, I completely can stay in the moment and not even think about my Christmas shopping or what I haven't done yet. And it's the only time I'm not scattered is when I do yoga breathing.
Sarah, thank you for that. That reminds me of two things. One is the difference between being forced to pay attention and loving what you're doing. There's something called good work. It balances three things: what you're good at, what you love doing, and what has meaning to you. If you can align those three things, then your focus comes automatically. It's strong, and you're more likely to get into flow. And I think the difference between – I was talking to a guy last night, actually, who said when I was in school, I really had a horrible time. I wasn't interested. But now he's a very successful entrepreneur. He loves what he's doing. It's that same pattern you're talking about of finding some place where you can get that alignment of what you enjoy doing, what you're good at, and what has real meaning. The second thing about the yoga, I think yoga, meditation, those basic kinds of mental exercises are very important for finding a way to get our concentration focused while we minimize our emotions and disturbing feelings. Yoga is very relaxing. Meditation is very relaxing. As I said before, it's because the circuitry for managing emotions and calming them is the same as the circuitry for focusing on that thing we have to do. That's why I really am in favor of teaching this to kids. You know, the book Focus is the why to. I also made some audio instructions, how to, which have basic focusing exercises, one for kids, one for teens, one for grown-ups. It's from More Than Sound, one word, morethansound.net. And I put several kinds of focusing instructions on there. One is for concentration. One is for full sensory awareness in the moment. Another is for empathy or for understanding other people's perspective. Each of those is a very important kind of focus. And I feel that if we want to get better at these things, we can, but it does take some practice.
One of the how-tos that's in your book is actually addressed by something that Natalie is tweeting at us. To notice when one is not focused will build awareness. She also talks about mindfulness meditation, but just the very simple act of saying, I'm not focused right now, is something that can help to align you a bit.
Well, it's interesting. If you're able to say, I'm not focused right now, you're already mindful, because what you've done is to step out of the wandering mind and drifting along with it. And you're up in the balcony of the mind noticing, hey, my mind is wandering. And that already stops it from wandering. So you're halfway there.
Let's go to Gear, who's calling from East Hampton, New York. Hello there. You're on Where We Live.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
So I had a couple of comments. One of your previous callers was talking about and asking a question about the people who stepped out and to smoke. I used to be a smoker, and what that did for me was it allowed me to take a break from whatever task that I was doing. And that's when I came back in, I was able to go back in and focus again. And I think that was a benefit that I had over others, in the sense I would have to sit through their task and never get a break. The second question comment I wanted to state was, I also have ADD, and it's been a curse and a blessing at the same time. Somebody told me that I had something called warm body syndrome, and that is something that I think a lot of people say. When I've noticed that other people have the same symptoms, and I tell them, they are very grateful that I mentioned to them. And maybe your guest can tell us a little bit more what that is and how it affects people. But essentially, is you just work better, much better, in vicinity with people, even though you don't have to necessarily be engaged in conversation with them.
It's called warm body syndrome, Gear. Thank you very much. Daniel?
Well, let me speak first to the power of the break. Taking a break is really important because, as I mentioned before, you can overuse concentration. And so many of us get glued to our task, glued to our computer screen at work, and forget to take a break. But the brain burns a certain fuel, glucose, it's called. It's a kind of sugar, natural sugar in the brain, and can use it up. And then we're running on empty. And one of the symptoms is we are very distracted. We can't keep our focus. We get a little irritable. And the answer is to take a break. So if you're a smoker, you have the natural impulse, well, I'll go out and take a smoke. But what you're doing from a concentration attention point of view is you're letting that system in the brain refuel. So when you go back, it's like you rebooted. By the way, a short nap does the same thing. It's a powerful way to reboot the brain and let it fuel up again. I'm sorry to say I've never heard of the warm body syndrome, so I really shouldn't comment.
I think what he's talking about is actually performing better within the presence of others as opposed to by oneself, if I'm getting the shorthand of what Gear is talking about.
Well, that may be. But I could only hypothesize. One of the things is, you know, it feels good to do things with other people much more than being isolated all day. We get a certain boost just from the sociality of it. Another is that I think people's brains, when they focus together, get in sync. I think that it becomes mutually reinforcing, hypothetical, conjecture. But I've noticed that time and time again.
Let's go to Craig, who's calling from West Hartford. Hello, Craig. Go ahead. You're on with Daniel Goleman. Hi, Craig. Well, it was too much to actually assume that we'd be able to go through the show without another phone call dropping. Let's go to Rick in Brantford. Hello, Rick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How are you, Mr. Goldman?
Hi, Rick.
I have a question for you when it comes to ADD. Now, I'm sure you're aware that studies have been done on medications for ADD, finding that only stimulant medications work. In fact, the drug company who put out Strattera has found, doctors have found that it fails miserably, the only non-stimulant medication made for ADD, because it actually affects the reuptake of certain receptors in the brain. Now, I can never and have never seen any documentation that shows that exercising your brain can slow the reuptake or produce more of a certain chemical on a specific neuron. Can you point to specific documentation specifically that states that this does work?
No, as I said, the studies at the various universities, for example, University of Wisconsin, are being done now. And they're not at the level of neurotransmitter reuptake. Pharmacological research focuses on that because that's the mechanism that they work on. Allowing the brain to manage itself means that you're actually manipulating hundreds of neurotransmitters. When we decide to focus, we actually create a change in how the genes for focus operate at that moment. But the technology for monitoring that really doesn't exist. You can't do that with people in an office. What you can do is something more direct, which is study the connection between people's ability to manage their own attention, to practice strengthening that, and then to do an attentional task. What you don't know, what's the black box or the brain chemical mechanisms, but what you do know is that what you want to have as the end product, better attention, better performance, is there. And cognitive science has hundreds of methods for doing that.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Again, our phone number is 860-275-7266. We're talking with Daniel Goleman. His new book is called Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. He's, of course, the best-selling author of Emotional Intelligence. Let's go to our friend Rand Cooper, who's a frequent contributor to the Colin McEnroe Show. He's calling from Hartford today. Hey, Rand, what's on your mind?
Hey, John. I think it would be hard to exaggerate the importance of reading for kids in developing the kind of stillness, mental space, and focus that Dan Goleman is talking about.
When you talk about reading, tell me more, Rand. I mean, why do you think reading will help?
To give kids some shelter from the ambient noise and from the constant distraction, to create for them that very traditional and very special, I might even say unique, place and space where they are quiet, physically still, and their minds are engaged in that magic trick whereby words on a page create these seductive illusions and experiences for them. I think it's threatened by this culture of distraction that we have. And I also think that parents give a lot of mixed messages about this. Many parents understand, accept, and even preach the importance of reading. But you can be preaching all that if you're sitting around yourself, not actually reading, not reading books, with your smartphone in hand all the time. You're not really, as they say, modeling what your child needs to see in order to have a shot at developing that very, very, very precious activity.
Rand, thanks so much. Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, I was talking to a middle school teacher the other day who was saying, I've been teaching the same text to my students, and they're very bright students, for 10 years now. It's a book on mythology. She said, the last few years, kids are having trouble comprehending the book, and I think it's because they're distracted more. It's ironic. I agree with you that reading does allow kids everything you say, but it's also a test of concentration. The mind wanders during reading, or you feel like you've got to check that text from your friend, if you're an 11-year-old. And what's happening is that it undermines the ability to build comprehension on top of comprehension on top of comprehension. In other words, to understand long text in in depth. And this is a critical intellectual skill that I think is also being attacked by the distractedness, and one that I, as a writer of books, feel is extremely important, and teachers do too. So I think that reading, getting kids to read, is another way to help them learn how to continue to concentrate, continue to bring your mind back, continue to struggle or to work with understanding the text.
When Rand was talking about the parents maybe not modeling the best behavior, attached to their smartphone and constantly checking with multiple distractions in their lives, it got me thinking about what our earlier caller, Craig, who unfortunately couldn't stick around for us, was going to mention, which was he believes that there's an addiction to distraction, that indeed we're becoming addicted to these multiple things happening at once, and we can't tear ourselves away as much as we might like.
Well, and there is a theory that when you get that text from your friend or you get that email, that you get a slight dollop of pleasure in the reward circuitry of the brain, which is what, of course, goes on in addictions. That's the circuitry that lights up during an addiction. So you could say it's a mild form. I don't think we're helpless in the face of it, but I think there is that aspect for sure.
We just got an email from Julie, and I think you mentioned this slightly earlier, but I would like to read this because I think a lot of our callers, our listeners, are concerned about this in young people. She says, I sat in the car at 9:10 and heard a very apropos discussion on where we live. My 8:30 meeting was with my 4.5-year-old preschool child's teachers about his inability to focus on the task at hand and being distracted by the 14 other classmates around him. Can the author suggest any exercises for us to do at home or help guide us through some research, what we can do to help our child follow through with routines and transitions?
Well, the basic thing that you want a child to learn is you do the task at hand first, and then you can have what would be a distraction as a reward. So, for example, you know, if you have a chore to do, you do the chore, then you can do the video game. Or if you have homework to do, you do that first, and then you do the thing that you wanted to do instead or during. And that teaches children this basics of cognitive control. And then, of course, there are the kinds of exercises they do, like with those second graders in Spanish Harlem, which seem to help them both focus and calm down. So I think that if parents will do that kind of thing for kids, they'd be giving them a little jump on helping this circuitry go through its natural development and speed up the rate at which those brain cells connect.
Joanne is calling from Storrs today. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Dr. Goldman, I just want to say hello. We met quite a few years ago on a mindfulness and teaching meeting that I attended, and as you did. I have always admired your work immensely, and I serve as the director of early childhood education and early intervention at UConn. And I've also been on the show with you, John, some years ago as well. And I really want to help also bring the discussion down to parents of infants and toddlers, because actually beginning this process of encouraging sustained attention and regulation of distress away from these entertainments that are so seductive with new technology to, you know, much more basic experiences of pleasure in interaction, you know, between mothers and fathers and their children. Reading is just such a brilliant and important activity that parents often feel comfortable doing with their very young children. But finding these ways for the littlest ones, as you just said in the conversation with the mom who emailed about her 4.5-year-old, it's just we can't start early enough with this because we are starting so early with these digital distractions.
Joanne, thank you so much for your phone call. Daniel?
And you know what? It reminds me of some fascinating research that shows with a pre-verbal toddler, one you're teaching to talk, it's the moment when the toddler and you are both paying attention to that other thing you're about to name, that the toddler's brain registers the name. It's called joint mutual attention. And parents can help very young infants, very young toddlers, with that by observing the world around them together. That's a very basic way to do it.
John's in Hamden. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I'd like to know where you can find a coach. And also, second question, is ADD a genetic trait?
Two good questions.
And the answer to the first one is I don't know where to find a – you mean a coach for ADD, I assume. And there are many. I'm not attached to any network of them, so I can't really recommend any. I don't know even if they're certified. I think word of mouth or the web or a combination of the both. The second question, also I'm agnostic on. I don't know if ADD is strongly genetic. I know that genetic means epigenetic also, which is to say we have given genes, but how we treat those genes, how the environment interacts with them, determines how they get expressed. And that's, again, why I'm an advocate or becoming an advocate of teaching kids attention skills rather than just medicating, teaching them abilities which will help them express those genes in the right way through the rest of their lives.
Just quickly back to John's first question, and perhaps not necessarily having to do with ADD, but do you buy into the idea that a coach of some sort of mentor might help us through our inability to focus in our lives?
I think coaches, expert coaches who really know what they're doing, are a great idea for any skill, including paying attention. There's this idea of, 10,000 hours makes you a master of a domain. But actually, it's only true if you have an expert coach watching your performance and telling you what to improve so that you'll get better and better and better. And everyone at the top of the sports or performance pyramid has a coach like that. I don't see why it wouldn't work for attentional skills, too.
That's one of the big myths you tackle in the book, this 10,000 hours, and I'm glad we mentioned this, whether or not practicing badly for 10,000 hours actually gets us anywhere in life at all.
We get better at being bad.
We get better at being bad. Let's go to Matt in Hartford because we're running low on time. Matt, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling because I'm a fire dancer. I practice art form called poi, and that's just one art form under a larger umbrella term called the flow arts that deal with a lot of object and prop manipulation like hooping or contact juggling, all sorts of things. And I was just really excited to hear your guests talk about, the flow state, because there's this whole community devoted to, using these tools to find ways to enter that state.
Well, Matt, first of all, thank you very much. And Daniel Goldman, we have just about a minute or so left. I suppose if you're a fire dancer, you'd probably better be paying attention, right?
And, it's interesting. High-risk sports like that, or rock climbing, where you have to pay attention or you're a goner, absolutely put us into flow, because that's the state in which you have to be to perform it in the first place. On the other hand, I think if we can concentrate, there's this idea of mindfulness or amping up your ability to pay attention in the moment. That will get us into flow even when the stakes aren't so high. We're not dancing with fire. We're not going to, fall off a cliff, but we're with somebody we love, or we're in a beautiful surround and we want to really experience to our fullest. All we have to do is be present.
Daniel Goldman is the author of Focus, The Hidden Driver of Excellence. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate it, Daniel.
John, a pleasure. Thanks again.
Our program is produced by Tucker Ives. The senior producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.